is Benny Blades from the University of Miami, and you're talking sports with Randy Harris.
All right, we are back coming to you live from Tournament Pizza. I want to tell you probably one of my favorite things that happened in Phoenix.
What's that?
We are getting ready to go back out, possibly, and talk to A.J. Fletcher, but I want to tell you the story. So we probably had nine interviews a day. So we're very fortunate enough we got to sit down with the Miles Killebrew, who plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
And he was there with a table that it was a religious outfit.
Yeah.
And we started to talk, and I basically gave my views and, you know, how I don't mind talking until it gets to that certain level. You know, I'm one religion, you're a different religion, I respect your religion, but it doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
You know, so I was trying to be as polite, and what a cool young guy. I mean, he really was. So we start talking, and I said that the former chaplain of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah. Doug.
Doug, who I was friends with.
Yeah.
We would talk all the time. I mean, back when you were there, you know, Leonard and, you know, Doug would always be there. So when my mother-in-law passed away, I asked Doug to do the service.
Yeah.
And he refused.
Yeah.
And they both lost it. Miles Killebrew lost it, and so did the chaplain of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
And he said they both apologized for that,
mm-hmm.
which was cool.
Yeah.
And it, honestly, when I told my wife, she was impressed and thankful and, you know, said thank them. And, you know, and they said that's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mother-in-law believed in, you know, the Rose side of the family believed in. What does it have to do with me?
Yeah.
But for him to say no, and we were friends, they both were really like.
I said the same thing, though, when you told me, you know. But again.
Coming from a chaplain to say it, you know, coming from a friend.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's kind of like what Mike Richmond said. You know, were you taking my side because we're friends? Were you taking, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But for a chaplain to agree that it was kind of garbage kind of made me and my family feel better.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, we don't need to get into talking sports.
No, today, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, that's cool. That's really dope. I'm glad to hear that. You know the only place I'd rather be than here right now? If you hit the
Philadelphia?
Guess. No, at this Chiefs parade. It's looking like
a yeah. I don't know.
Go celebrate with the guys,
Chiefs,
man.
Chiefs Kingdom. I don't know if it's possible to ever have a better parade than the boat parade with Brady.
Yeah, that's going to be hard.
It's going to be hard to top. Not I mean, that they top each other. The rings Brady. Try to top. You know, the whole thing with throwing the Lombardi.
For you, definitely not, because you were a part of the city. You know, I mean, you're from Philly, but this is really your home. And
yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like a bigger deal that Tom Brady gets to do it. But I think, just wait, he might do one at a boat in Tampa Bay just to upstage.
Just
to upstage Tom.
Well, and if he does, you know, then, until they go and do something like that, it's totally different.
It was just from the outside looking in, it looked really, really cool. It's unique.
Would you ever go to one, that you were not involved in? Like, I don't have any interest. I don't have any interest in going when it's a local team.
If one of my really good friends, Kenny Clark, J.M. Brown, one of these guys, or somebody I'm close to.
Cincinnati Bengals?
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully more, you know.
I kind of threw you under the bus, so you know.
Oh, because he knows how much I love Patrick.
No, we talked about it.
Oh, yeah, he's very well aware.
No, we talked about it. But
we had that conversation many a time.
You know, I've always said this. I'm the type of person, I'll never talk behind your back. If I'll say it to them, I'll say it to you. And we brought it up, and I said,
I said the only team I'll be okay with is his team because, Alex is my guy. But no, he knows I love that guy.
You look good in your sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Clothing line. I don't have a shirt. I mean, I was cold out there, chilly. Could have used a sweatshirt. It's heavy duty. It's nice quality. I mean, I was waiting for the Caleb special.
We'll get some more. We'll get some
anything else you want to beg for?
No, I'm just saying that Will Galston's going to get you a jersey and going to hand deliver it to you. And I'm still waiting on a Bitnock, jersey or sweatshirt.
Well, it was part of our contract that we had that Caleb could stay involved in the show if he gives you nothing.
Well, he gave me a shove to the locker rooms over there. Like, I couldn't stop him.
No.
I was on offense.
Oh, beautiful thing. So earlier today, I'm on the radio kind of listening to sports talk. And they start talking about the changes baseball is making. Remember you said baseball can't make any changes. So apparently now.
Well, no, I didn't say they can't.
It can't
make
be
them.
More interesting.
I said that, I'm against changes.
Okay.
I'm against all these changes.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's taking away from the game. Just because somebody came up a legal way to make their team better with the Switch,
yeah,
they've banned it. And my thing is, if you're a professional athlete, okay, and you can't hit to the left side,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're a left-handed hitter, you can't go down the third baseline, mm-hmm. and they're smart enough to move everybody and switch them all over, you got to get better and bunt down the left field line.
I agree with you. But look at it from the business perspective. You see the NBA taking off. Football skyrocketing. NBA is getting bigger. All these leagues have made changes to make offense more prevalent. Baseball is the one that's been set in their ways. And up until the World Series, nobody is really watching baseball games. And the tickets are $15. You know, nobody's in the stadium. You can go up to the front if you want to. They want to put butts in seats. How do you put butts in seats? You make changes. You have a shot clock like basketball does. So you can't sit there on a mound for 2 minutes messing around.
I can live with that.
You have to get in the box.
I can live with
that. I understand the whole switching thing. But also, look at quarterbacks. Tom Brady said to himself, hey, it's not the rules job to protect the receiver from getting hit over the middle. It's the quarterback's job to not throw it over the middle. But fan outrage, people are getting hurt. They said, okay, if you hit the unprotected receiver, it's a penalty. The quarterback should be able to, hey, this guy's about to hit me, throw it away. That's what Tom does. I'm about to get hit, throw it away. You want to hold on to the ball, you get hit. Now it's a penalty on the defensive guy more times than not. But viewership is going up. Points are growing up. You're not having 10-3 Super Bowls. It's 38-35, whatever it is. And the money's going up. So baseball's doing the smart thing for their business.
So these changes, one was make the bags bigger, the bases
yeah.
bigger.
Yeah.
What's that going to do?
Easier to get on.
Easier to get to the base?
Yeah, when you're sliding.
Do you really think another – I don't care if you put another 2 feet on it. I don't think that changes the game.
Yeah. If he catches it, he wants to touch you. I can slide a little bit more to this way and get a touch on it without getting hit.
I like the style of your slide.
Yeah,
that was nice.
That was smooth.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to slide into a base?
One time, and I almost hurt myself.
Yeah.
So I'm never doing it again.
You know, the switch.
The thing I hate about baseball, though, is that they bring in one pitcher for one batter, and then they got to bring in another one after that with a different arm side, a lefty, a righty.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, it just drags out the game for so long because they got to warm up for 5, 10, 15 pitches before they actually throw the real
well,
live ball.
That's true. I forgot. You're the same guy that if somebody comes in and orders a pepperoni pizza and then somebody else comes in and orders a sausage pizza, that bothers you.
What do you mean?
It's different. A right-handed pitcher to this one batter, it's part of the game.
Yeah,
it's the strategy of the game.
Yeah, I get that.
But like to now say that, no, you bring a pitcher in, and he has to stay in for X amount of batters.
Yeah, he's
got to
stay in the whole inning.
It's awful.
I think it's perfect. Keeps the game moving.
I mean, yeah, I understand it takes away from the strategy of it, because in basketball, people will put a defensive guys out to get a stop, then call a timeout, then put their offensive guys out right. to try and get points. So I understand the strategy of it. But the game is like 8 hours long.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I wish baseball was 3 innings.
Yeah.
You know, I'd get there in the second inning because I won't get there early, and I'll leave in the second inning because I want to beat the traffic, so yeah. I'll watch one inning.
Do you remember when the NFL did that thing after the Rams beat the Saints in that crazy game with pass interferences? Lasted yeah. 1 year. They're like, we're not doing this. Because it slows the game down so much. It's not practical. So if it's not practical, I'm sure they'll remove it out. But I like that they're trying to do something.
Sure.
You need a younger crowd. Because you're right. going to age yourself out. Right? There's younger players coming in. But the people who go watch baseball games are not young people.
Right.
Unless they're, you know, friends and family of the people playing.
Then every Major League Baseball team should play like the Savannah Bananas.
That's not enough. But that's like Globetrotters. Nobody wants to watch
no, that. That is what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah. Nobody wants to see that.
Baseball's boring. And it's always going to be boring. And I agree, you want to speed it up.
He wasn't bored with Barry Bonds.
That's why they let certain things go.
It wasn't boring.
That's why
then.
Nobody looked in lockers to see what kind of medication was sitting on the thing.
Anderstein.
Okay,
all over the counter.
Can we real quick talk about a couple of things? UFC. I want to talk about Volkanovski, and I want to talk about Conor McGregor. We can do McGregor first because it's quicker.
Okay.
So he was out of USADA testing for a long time.
And he still is.
Right.
Okay, but his fight is when?
They haven't announced it.
They haven't announced what it is yet.
Right. Well, okay. They can't announce it yet because he has to be in USADA for six months.
Okay.
Now, they haven't even started filming it, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, you know, by the time they film it and then by the time they show it, it'll be 6 months.
Okay. All right. Okay, cool. So that was a quick one. So now back to Volkanovski.
More importantly,
yeah.
And we'll say Volkanovski because we'll have Jim Miller here in a few minutes. Give me your thoughts on the fact that Conor McGregor is going to coach against and then fight against Michael Chandler and not Poirier.
And he's not going to fight Dustin Poirier?
Yeah, I'm saying Poirier beat Chandler.
Oh, yeah, but nobody wants to watch Poirier fight.
You want to watch Chandler fight?
Yeah, he's exciting.
Is he really?
He's
exciting because he bites fingers and...
And he just throws haymakers. And he's like, I'm going to get knocked out or I'm going to knock somebody else out. And that's how he fights. Is it not smart? Yes. But do I enjoy watching him go out there and just wildly throw haymakers? Yes.
And I didn't mean to say that I don't want to watch Chandler, but I don't not want to watch Poirier either. I think Poirier is a good fighter.
He is a good fighter, but you want to see him fight McGregor for a fourth time?
No.
I don't.
No.
So I see why they made that fight.
I'd like to see him run that Gaethje fight back when Poirier and Gaethje went at it toe-to-toe. Yeah. Like, that was a hell of a fight.
Like, we've seen it three times. He won one. McGregor won one. McGregor got hurt the other one. I know it's still a win for him, right? But I don't really don't count that. It's whatever. But I don't want to see a fourth one. I'm good on that. Well, and I don't think that's going to put butts in seats.
Speaking of fights, they are now saying that if Jake Paul wins over Tommy Fury, he will be ranked as a WBC ranked boxing professional.
I'm not going to watch another Jake Paul event.
What about Logan Paul?
Logan Paul.
Did you see that off the top rope?
Logan Paul and WWE. I texted you this like five times now. WWE is back. The storytelling is phenomenal. Roman Reigns is a stud. The Usos are studs. That whole bloodline thing. Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens, the way they brought that
the split of the brothers,
the way they got that whole thing together, it's like watching a movie. Yeah. It is absolutely amazing. They're doing I love Brock Lesnar's role.
Yeah. Well, now Brock's a good guy.
Yeah, Cowboy Brock.
Right. The Canadian Cowboy.
It's fantastic. They're doing a great job. Props to them.
Let's hit a break when we come back. Most wins, most fights in the UFC. Jim Miller when we return. This is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8 Man Strong and Staff Cell.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Vernon Davis, and you're talking sports with Randy Harris.
8 Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you are bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life, if you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8 Man Strong.
Tour de Pizza is back as Tournament Day Pizza, located at 170 47th Avenue Northeast in St. Petersburg. Located inside the Racquet Club of St. Pete, we've proudly been serving the greater St. Petersburg area for the last 15 years and running. Tour de Pizza, full menu, full liquor bar, same great pizza, Tour de Pizza. Visit us online at tourdepizza.com. And remember, a slice a day keeps the doctor away. Tour de Pizza, it's where winners eat.
It all starts here. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, roars along the spectacular waterfront of beautiful downtown St. Petersburg. Are you ready? Be here. March 3rd to the 5th, the NTT IndyCar Series headlines an action-packed weekend of racing under the sun.
Scott McLaughlin, he is now an IndyCar race winner!
Advance tickets start at $25. Get yours now. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, March 3rd to 5th. Be here.
You're hungry. Where do you go to eat?
Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
You want to have a drink? Where do you go?
Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
Having a get-together with the guys from the softball team? Where do you do it?
That's right. Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
Located at 1320 Central Avenue, St. Petersburg, right across from Tropicana Field, Berg's is the best place to take the whole family for food and fun. Going to a Rays game? Have dinner before the game at Berg's, and after the Rays win, come and celebrate with all your friends at Berg's, right across from the Trop. So come down and see Berg and the whole gang at Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Construction companies always face hiring challenges. Do you need temporary help on your project? Or maybe you want a true partner for all of your staffing needs? StaffZone is construction staffing excellence, providing both skilled and general labor positions. And we want to work for you. For all of your construction staffing needs, call us at 877-247-ZONE or visit us online at thestaffzone.com to find your local branch. Our staffing professionals are eager and ready to earn your business. That's 877-247-ZONE.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mark Wiley from the Baltimore Orioles. You're listening to Talking Sports with Randy Harris.
All right, so I do have to give kudos to Joe Marcourt, who we were arguing as to who will be one, who will be two, pound for pound. Mm-hmm. I didn't think the media would leave Alex as number one. Deserves to stay number one, yes. Pound for pound, but I didn't think that they would do that, and they did. So even though I thought he should have stayed, I said I didn't think that the MMA media would leave him at number
one. Mark, he's such smart. He's a smart guy.
He looked too good, man. He looked too good in that fight. And to go up in weight class with a guy that everybody thought was unbeatable and was like this boogeyman of the UFC, like kind of like Khamzat is, and to go out there and he looked great and he put a lot of damage on him. You know, he just didn't win in points. I saw a quote, somebody said that Volkanovski won the fight, but, you know, Islam won the contest.
Right.
Right? Like he put it on him. And Volk looked, he had no cuts on his face, nothing. Islam's all bruised up, you know, and so I think that they did the right thing.
Would you like to see them run it again?
I would.
Yeah.
I would definitely like to see
which
that.
Holds up both belts.
Yeah, but they've washed everybody else in the division, so who can you really complain?
Let's go back out to Las Vegas as we get ready for the return this weekend. Perth last week, Las Vegas this week. Let's welcome to the program Jim Miller. Jim, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate your time. I know it's just the start of fight week, but are they all the same, or do you purposely try to do something to kind of change fight weeks up for you?
They're relatively all the same, honestly. It's a little bit like blast in the past this week, because through the whole COVID thing, we were actually staying at like the Embassy Suites or something like that. We had our own like private hotel, and it was really secluded, and it was actually kind of awesome for us athletes. But now we're back into the casinos here, so you kind of have to deal with some of the typical stuff that we used to have to deal with, you know, before COVID, and it definitely feels a little bit more like the olden days.
Getting through the casinos, getting to do the media events or the workouts with all the fans and such.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
What's the biggest change, you know, in the sport from when you first started 2.5 years ago? That's a joke. And today. Thanks.
You know, the biggest change is just the size of it, I think. You know, I mean, I came into the UFC in 2008. It's just been this steady growth over the years, and it is a huge sport. And you know, I help coach youth wrestling. My boys are just finishing up their wrestling season. They actually have a tournament on fight night or on fight day. To finish out their season, and a lot of the wrestlers on the team, they watch the sport, they've got their favorite fighters, and unfortunately some of them, it's not me, but my plan is to go out on Saturday and make them change their minds. But now I'm seeing this generation of 10 to 14 year old kids that are big fans of the sport, and you know, that wasn't there when I was came into the UFC in 2008.
MMA is one of the few sports that I've watched that you kind of get better with age. You know, you have Glover Teixeira winning at his age and John Jones getting up there and you're still being great and everything like that. And how do you go in when you're fighting a younger person? What is that like for you? Like, understanding, like, I have so much more experience. I'm used to being in certain positions. How do you use that to your advantage?
It's a tool. That experience is definitely it's a tool. It's a weapon. So there's a level of comfort having seen just about everything anybody can do inside the octagon and having fought the wide variety of body types and styles. There's no new thing that I'm going to see inside there. So that definitely builds confidence. This is a sport. It's a young man's sport. So When you get older, you gotta kind of adapt and evolve your training and the way you fight as well. I feel like I'm kind of figuring that out. I think the last couple of fights is proof of that.
Has weight cut gotten harder or easier for you as your career has gone on?
It's gotten a little bit easier for me as of late because I've taken some size off. I used to be one of the lightweights that walked around about 190 pounds. This is a while ago now, but when I was first diagnosed with Lyme disease in 2016, the medication I was on made me go to the bathroom a lot, and it was really hard to keep up with that. So the antibiotic really tore my stomach up. So I ended up losing about like at least 12 pounds of muscle in 2016. So nowadays it's a little bit easier for me because I walk around like lower 170s, and you know, I know the right things to do. I eat really clean. So yeah, the weight cuts have gotten pretty easy.
When you say you eat pretty clean, does that mean like eating Reese's and stuff is bad?
Well, if you're washing first.
Yeah, exactly. A little hand sanitizer. That'll go clean them right up. You know, yeah, like I really make an effort to eat like from Whole Foods, and you know, it takes effort and work and a lot of time in my day to make dinner that way. You know, for me and my family, but I feel like the fact that I'm still around and you know, still putting guys away is kind of proof that my lifestyle is working.
So, Jim, I don't get hit in the head for a living, and I've been to so many of these events that I'm like, just like you said, they're all kind of the same. I remember talking to you behind this curtain and after your interviews and hanging out in the back. I don't know what arena it was. I don't know what city it was in. But what over your career has stuck out the most? Like, is there certain memories that you have that is just iconic? Or
I mean, definitely the some of the fights. You know, I've been perfectly honest about it. You know, like when I fought Donald the first time. You know, he hit me to the body in the very first exchange of the fight that bruised my spleen. And so every one of the front kicks that he was throwing was just to a soft belly, and it really hurt. And you know, I feel like a decent amount of fighters probably would have been stopped with that exchange, but he ended up you know, knocking me out you know, into the second. But I had a little bit of PTSD from that. And you know, like when my training partners and coaches would mention fighting Cerrone again, I was like, man, you know, like I still remember how bad my stomach hurt and my body hurt in that fight. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do it, you know. And then to get the opportunity to fight him, you know, on short notice in that last one, and it to be as poetic as it was, to be tied with him for all time wins, and to take that title from him, it couldn't have happened better. And I was able to overcome that that little bit of nervousness that I was dealing with.
With you bringing that up, you of your most fights in UFC history, is your plan to be like Tom Brady and make that record so unattainable that nobody could catch it?
I mean, maybe, you know, like my goal is to get to UFC 300. And I think that if I can get there in the way that I want to, I think that'll be it. I'll call it quits, you know, in about 18 months. That's not like, you know, me fighting Saturday and you know, maybe fighting once in between. I'd like that fight to be my 45th UFC fight. And I don't know if anybody's going to get to that. And honestly, that's really not a concern of mine. You know, like there are a couple guys that are right behind me, Arlovski, you know, Guida's coming up. He's still around. So I think a majority of the guys that are right there behind me, there's only a couple that could get to that point where they have as many fights as me, but it's really not one of those things that I'm majorly concerned about, like getting out of reach of them. I want to do it in my terms, my way. You know, still to this day, I fight the way that I fight. I don't go out there and I don't fight conservatively. You know, my goal is to put opponents away, and I haven't won a decision since 2016, you know? So that's something. That's something that nobody will, you know, get to is like the style of fighting that I've been able to put together for this long, because the guys that are still sticking around, they're not fighting as aggressively, and they're not putting away opponents like I do.
Right, for sure. Give me your thoughts on your opponent Saturday.
You know, Alex is he's a tough dude, well-rounded. You know, it's a fight in the UFC, and it's I'm excited for the fight. I really like the fight. I'm super happy that he hopped in on short notice. I know it's not always easy. I'm one of the guys that I appreciate every opportunity because I do know that at one day it's going to stop, you know, I'm not going to be in fight week, preparing, I might be helping somebody, but I'm not going to be in there, you know, it's not going to be my fight. So, I'm looking forward to a great fight. Like I said, he's tough, he's dangerous. And, that gets me fired up.
I kind of mentioned when you mentioned about back in the casino hotels and the fans and, you know, always fans always getting autographs, getting pictures. I'm curious, what have you collected? What have you kept from your career?
I've kept as many like gloves and fight shorts as I've can remember to. I got to a point where I was like, oh man, I better start keeping some of these for my kids.
right.
So, I've got that type of stuff, and I've got posters, you know, especially the ones that I'm on, and you know, the couple main events that I was in. So, but I'm not like a huge collector of stuff. It's more so that I can, give it to the people that mean something to me, and give them a little bit of a, souvenir of right. my career.
Sure. What do you consider Saturday? Do you consider Saturday night work, or are you considering Saturday night, you know, enjoyment from all the hard work to get to Saturday?
The latter, you know, the hard part is the training and the weight cut. Like that's the stuff that like you go through. I mean, I love training, but it wears on you. You know, I mean, there's a reason that you it's called the grind, right? Like that's what it is. You're day in, day out trying to push yourself a little bit further than you went yesterday, and that hurts. It means you're sore. It means you're beat up. It means you're tired, and come fight night. I get nervous for every fight, and you know, I'm going to be nervous when I'm warming up for the fight, and there's going to be butterflies in my stomach. But as soon as I stand at that curtain and it's time to walk out, everything goes away, and it's like now's the time to go out and make it worth it. You know, I take all this time away from other things that I like to do and my family and spending time with my kids and friends, and I bust my butt in the gym, and I do the extra work. I watch my diet. I make all these sacrifices to what a normal life would be. Fight night is when I get the chains taken off of me. You know, and I get to go out, and there's nothing to hold back. You know, it's 15 minutes of just all out. You know. Give it 100%, it's kind of the reward.
Great stuff, Jim. Thank you very much for your time. Enjoy yourself Saturday night. I know we have your address. We're going to send you a care package from Ape Man Strong, as well as a case of salsa from Blue Smoke Salsa, the best stuff you've ever had.
Awesome.
Have a good time and enjoy it on Saturday.
Thank you very much. That's my plan.
Thank you, Jim Miller, back in the octagon as he extends that record. But like he mentioned, Andre Arlovsky has a good 15, 20 years left. He'll be 93 and still fighting. This is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8 Man Strong and Staff Zone.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, I'm the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart of World Championship Wrestling. And guess who I'm standing next to? Randy Harris. Hey, Randy, just remember one thing. Never trust a midget.
8-Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you're bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life,
If you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8-Man Strong.
Does your garage door opener seem to have a mind of its own? Or is it a squeaky or noisy garage doors? Sounds like they need a simple tune-up. Call Moores Boulevard Garage Doors. That's M-O-R-S-E Boulevard Garage Doors at 727-522-5070. I'm so glad I did, and they fixed my garage door correctly on the very first visit. Moores Boulevard Garage Doors offers 24/7 service and no extra charge for nights or weekend emergency calls. Repair or replace your garage door with Moores Boulevard Garage Doors. Call them today at 727-522-5070.
Skunk Ape Electronics is just amazing. Get connected through music with Skunk Ape Electronics. Custom boomboxes, veteran-owned and operated, and American-made. Go to skunkapeelectronics.com and change the way you listen to music. Get 10% off your first purchase when you sign up for our newsletter. Stop by any Knockout Radio broadcast and check out what they use from Skunk Ape Electronics. Amazing. Just amazing.
It all starts here. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, roars along the spectacular waterfront of beautiful downtown St. Petersburg. Are you ready? Be here. March 3rd to the 5th, the NTT IndyCar Series headlines an action-packed weekend of racing under the sun.
Scott McLaughlin, he is now an IndyCar race winner!
Advance tickets start at $25. Get yours now. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, March 3rd to 5th. Be here.
The Country Depot is located in the heart of downtown Brooksville at 36 North Broad Street. And they have everything under the sun, from one-of-a-kind art and decor to sports memorabilia, from metal signs and handbags to men's wallets. It's worth the drive. But you can also shop online at countrydepotstore.com. You never know what you'll come across when you visit. Country Depot.
Got bills? Looking for work? But nobody is hiring. StaffZone is. As the leading provider of commercial construction, industrial, and special event staffing throughout the Southeast and Texas, StaffZone has plenty of work to go around, and they need you now. Don't wait. Go now to www.thestaffzone.com and find a branch closest to you. Work today, get paid today. That's the StaffZone way.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, yo, this is Ricky Waters, and you're listening to Talking Sports with Randy Harris.
All right, we are back coming to you live from Tournament de Pizza.
I sound like 50 Cent just now. Ricky Waters.
It was
like
Ricky Waters. Well, Ricky Waters didn't know that he was Ricky Waters when he did it.
Okay, so I got a quick, before we go to our next thing.
Okay.
Okay. I want to talk a little quarterbacks. Not Patrick Mahomes. We've talked about him enough.
Wow, really?
Not Patrick Mahomes.
Oh.
A lot of quarterback movement going on right now. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in the market. They have one quarterback on their roster currently, Kyle Trask, right? We haven't seen a lot from him. A lot of certainty. You haven't seen anything from him, really.
Thank you.
But, you know, also, there's that thing where you see a guy in the offseason, you see him in camp, you see him in OTAs, and if he's performing really well, you will hear about it. Before Pat Mahomes became a starter, you heard about it. Before Aaron Rodgers took over for Brett Favre, they were like, hey, Brett Favre, go ahead and get out of here because this kid is balling out, right? We want to see what he can do. What have you heard of anything about Kyle Trask, and what do you think the Bucs do with Derek Carr in the market, with possibly – you know, Aaron Rodgers being on the move. Where do you think they go with quarterback situation?
The quarterback in the Jets, still in the doghouse. First what's all, going on in San Francisco, huh?
Yeah, to Jimmy Garoppolo maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there's options. There's other options out there.
100%.
And anything and everything I've ever heard about Trask is not good.
Same.
You know, I've heard when he does throw out at practice, it's not good.
Yeah.
He was third for a reason.
Yeah.
And never saw the field.
Yeah.
If you would have thought that he is the future, if you would have anticipated Brady possibly leaving, if you would have anything, you would have had him play something.
Yeah. Especially in that game against the Falcons when Brady played two drives or whatever it was.
Right. Why don't you?
I tell people all the time, right? And I never want to bash anybody because I was a professional athlete. I understand how hard it is. After two practices, you know if somebody's got skills or not. Two or three practices, you watch him, you're like, oh, he's got something. Right? Something. When I was at the Jets, I watched Zach Wilson run the offense. After a week, I was like, I don't know. I don't see anything that shows me he was a number two picker overall. I saw Sauce Gardner after our first preseason game in the halftime. Guys were complaining about the coverage because preseason is real basic coverages. Sauce Gardner came into the locker room and brought everybody up there and yelled at the DBs. He said, I don't care about the coverage. I don't care what you think we should be doing. Go cover your man. We're playing man-to-man and cover two. Do your job. I was like, oh, he's got something. Garrett Wilson, two practices. He's got something. So I can, you know, Buck's got a lot to work on.
They definitely does. A lot to get to. But right now, I have waited. Here, fix this real quick. Take this. I have waited a long, long time, way longer than this should have happened. And it's fitting. Rondae Barber finally got in to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Long overdue. I can't wait. Jens Pulver, I am so happy for you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I was out in Phoenix, you know, when the word came out, and then I got home and I saw the video. The video of you finding out, I don't keep many things that I can find. That's going to be something I'm going to keep for the rest of my life.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a stunner. I wasn't ready. They all things kind of worked together, and I was tricked. I was duped. It was pretty cool. It was really cool, actually.
Who was in on duping you?
Well, so right off the bat, it's just the Where Are They Now had called first, you know, and this part I just can't get out of my head. The UFC's Where Are They Now had called, and the other times that they had done it, I'd already said, man, get the heck out. No, heck no, I'm not doing this, man. I'm like, well, why? I was like, because I don't like where I'm at,
sure.
You know, and then, but then they called this time, and I was like, you know, yeah, I'll do it. Because I just reflecting back where I'm at and just, stream, and I'm like, this will help the Twitch.tv/UFC stream. You know, that's where I work, and I'm like, this will help the stream. Yeah, you know what? I'm in a good place. I'll do it. So that started to set it up. So then, when we do every pay per view on the stream, we do a watch along with guests, and I had Viss and Mike Davis, TSM Viss. He's a big time gamer, Twitch streamer, and then Davis, of course, you know Mike Davis. He fights 155, so or do you go 45, and then. Yeah, he tried to go 45, so he's bouncing it out. But so they were my guests for this pay-per-view. And all of a sudden, my mod, or my producer, a.k.a. his name's Sean, I call him Snoo, a.k.a. Snoo, he was like, hey, they want you to change your hat. What do you mean, change my, what? Because I had my big game, my son's wrestling team on, hat on, and he's like, no, they want you to wear something UFC. So I grabbed my, I've got that one UFC hat that says world champion, that the world champs get to wear. And go out. So I have my UFC world champion hat. I put that on. And they're like, oh, I changed the backdrop in one of your scenes in your stream. So now it's got this big UFC logo. I'm like, oh, this thing is awesome. I love it. Yeah, very cool. And then he's like, so what they'll do is we'll start, because I basically every Saturday I do a watch along and I just commentate all the fights. So it's been a blast. So I was commentating the fights. And like, we want you to go when the pay-per-view starts, they want you to go full screen and react. They want to get your reaction. So I'm like, all right, I guess no problem. Then my wife texts me and says, hey, by the way, Carson has to film you. He's got a project that at school. They want to film, you know, film you at work. I'm like, all right, well, I'm down here in the studio. He can sit down and film away. I'm like, no problem, because he had interviewed me a couple weeks before for a school project. And it's like, all right, didn't think nothing of it. So my wife went off to work, and I'm streaming, and all of a sudden, when I flip it on, I'm looking, and I see the Jose Aldo, and I'm like, oh, yeah, badass. You know, maybe that's what they want me to react on. I'm like, heck, yeah. And then John Eric starts to go into it. I was like, wait, get the out of here. What the? And then I lost it, and then I look over there, and there's my son. So they did a good job. I had no clue, like, no idea. And it's ironic, literally 2 hours before that moment, I'm on the stream and someone had asked me, like pretty much every day, which I love, and I love the fans, I love my chat, and everybody's always asking, hey, are you in the Hall of Fame? You're in the Hall of Fame, right? I'm like, nah, no, I'm not. I'm like, you're not in the Hall of Fame? I'm like, nah, I just didn't do enough, you know, evidently. I'm okay. But I was okay with it. And, you know, but I had just 2 hours, literally 2 hours before that, I was like, nah, man, I haven't done enough. I haven't done enough yet. And boom, 2 hours later, I got that, and I was like, holy cow, I lost it.
I will say this. This is the first year that I didn't even think about it because I kind of almost gave up. You know, you and I have talked about this over the years.
Exactly.
You should have been in, you know, and we all just assumed, well, I don't know. And then when I saw it, it was unbelievable. Tell the story about what you said to your son regarding your dad. A lot of people know your story and your background. Some people don't. But that's something those words that you say are just incredible.
Well, you know, I know, because the whole thing is, you know, yeah, I've been just spinning back and forth, but there's he's right there. And I just, you know, I was like, man, I hope you're proud of your father, you know, because I wasn't proud of mine. I hated my father. In fact, if it wasn't for my father and what he did, I don't know if I would have went down this journey. This is a long story, but so my father was an abusive piece of shit. I hated him. Pardon my language. I know the
family. He said ship. Just for FCC, he said ship. S-H-I-P.
S-H-I-P. Yes. S-H-E-E-T. Sheet.
All right.
So, you know, and I was like, and so I've always, you know, I love my daughters, of course, and but I remember when I was beaten one time, really bad, my dad had beat me, I was laying in the bed, and I always remember this one day when I have a son, I'll never treat him this way. He'll never be scared. He'll never see his mom getting beaten up in a corner. He'll never, when he sees my truck, he'll never take off running and go into the woods and, oh, time to go hide. He'll never just live in fear. He'll never be in eggshells. He'll never get woke up in the middle of the night with his mother screaming, help me, Gen Z, help me. You know, and I'm like, my son will never do this. When I have a son, he'll never do this. I'll make time for him. I'll take him fishing. I'll hang out with him, you know, and that's, like I said, see, I start to well up, but throughout my career, obviously, I wanted, you know, I'm sure he could have been proud, but when this happens, I was like, and I hope you're proud of your dad. I hope when it's all said and done, you know, you'll be able to say, man, I was proud of my dad. My dad did a good job. My dad, you know, because that's what I was, that's what I was after my whole life, so. And he was sitting right there, and he was filming the whole thing. And, you know, I was like, you have that moment, that divine moment. It's like, wow, everything just kind of, how it all just played out. It's insane.
Now, I'm assuming he didn't know. He was just there filming something.
He didn't know. No, he didn't know either. It was funny because Butler, God, I love Brian Butler, man. He had already talked. I guess Kanika knew, my wife knew, just a few hours before, and he's like, "Well, I'll have can you film?" She's like, "I'm off. I'm heading to work because she works nights at the hospital." It's like, "I'm heading to work." Well, who's going to film? Well, I can have Carson. And see, in Brian's mind, Carson's still that little kid that I carried around with me everywhere. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's funny. So it's like, "Here, I'll give you his number. You can call him." And of course, Brian's like, "Wait, what? He's got a phone? Like, can he do this? Does he know what he's doing?" Like, he's 30, you know, it's just how time kind of, so when he called, I love Brian's rendition of it. He calls and he's like, "Yeah, your son answers, hello, can I help?" And he's like, you know, and he's like, "Dad, you a grown man? What?" You know, because my son's 13 years old. He's like, "All right, so here's what I need you to do. I need you to film your dad. He's going to be doing this reaction at work. And I just need you," and he's like, "I need you to make sure you do this and this." And it was funny, though, just because he's still just a little child, you know. He's just a little kid in his head, and I was like, "Well, that's how Brian's kids are to me, and they're in college and everything else." So it was just funny that, I mean, they're still my babies, but yeah, he was sitting right there, and so my wife had just found out, told him, but he had no idea. And then he was sitting, and he's sitting on my lap, and I forgot that you can't hear what I'm hearing in my headphones. And I'm like, "Here, try it for a minute." But then I'm sitting in the quiet going, "All right, I can't do that. I got to see it. Give me this back. I wish we had two headsets going." But, you know, so yeah, no, it was, like I said, he didn't know. It was crazy.
You know, friends, family, all this stuff. But talk about the teammates. Talk about Pat. Talk about Tim and Matt. You know, everybody that I've seen that has responded, you know, reaching out and them being as excited, obviously, as I am and, as of course, you are.
Well, like I said, man, I love my team. And it's the weirdest thing when this hit, that's the first thing that it's done. And I was just talking about this earlier, is it's taken me back. Like, I've gone back to when I was a kid, to these moments, you know, these abused moments, these abusive moments in my mind. I'm just replaying these things. And then I'm thinking about James Pryor and, you know, sitting at the wrestling matches and filming, and I'm thinking about his tapes and what that did for me. I'm thinking about Rick Maxson and his wife Lola, may she rest in peace, and his son Dennis, may he rest in peace, how they were taking me to wrestling tournaments when I was in high school and freestyle, and what these two dads did for me, you know. And then I think about my team. I think about getting on that train, because somebody had asked me, DJ DeSantis asked, or it might have been Ray Longo, but they were asking, we were just finishing up the stream, and I just did the watch along. Then I did the, I recapped with TJ DeSantis and Ray Longo. And, yes, what was the best, what was one of the best decisions you made in MMA? And I was like, you know, getting on that train. But, and I go, I took a train 2.5 days to come out to Iowa to be with, to be part of this Miletich team, to be with Pat, to be with Monty, to be with, you know, and then Matt ended up showing up right around the same time. And I had met him all at the UFC right before that. I was with Bob Shamrock, and he says, you know, he gave me his blessings. I want you to go out there. And I, so getting on that train, giving up everything I owned, showing up with two duffel bags, bopping them down in front of Mr. Miletich, said, I'm ready to be a world champion. Going into that racquetball court, Matt showing up, everybody showing up. I'll never forget Tim Sylvia when he showed up. He was as big as the mountain sky, boy. And then he, you know, but the way that he worked himself down to become the world champion, you know, that my teammates, when they showed up, all of them that I was training with, everybody, Ben Earwood, see, I start naming, I'm going to forget a couple names, and I don't want to be like that, but of course, Tony Fricklin, my brother, you know what I mean, stuff like that. Robbie Lawler was just a youngster. I mean, he hadn't even, he was a junior in high school when I first met him. And, you know, so it's just, I think about that, and I think about, my mind keeps flashing, like all the traveling we did. Because another funny thing happened. I know I'm going to keep going back to the UFC stream, but another funny thing happened is one time we were watching old WECs, and there was like, there I am commentating. I'm like, whoa, I did what? And there we are, Jeremy Horn's fighting here, and there I am in the corner. Then I went from commentating to the corner to this and to that. And then we're watching this other fight, and there's Jens over there. And I really started looking back, and I was telling this new, you know, my chat, I was like, I guess I really was kind of everywhere. We kind of were back in the day, that Miletich team, we were kind of everywhere. We were, you know, we were like, we had up and comers fighting in this, you know, in this venue. We had people all over the place. And it was funny when you kind of go back, it's like there's always a mention of us. You know, I remember running out there on the street, out on the farm road with the Hughes brothers, and I was like, I was the third Hughes. I kept calling myself, I'm the middle Hughes, you know, and stuff like that. But like I said, I love where I came from, but that was the best thing. The biggest thing I ever said, you know, I'm so thankful, and it was the scariest thing in the world, is that I got on that train, and I got on that train, and I came to Iowa. Greatest, you know, but it was the scariest thing, but the best thing I ever did.
And now, come July, International Fight Week, you will go in as the next UFC Hall of Famer.
It's still hitting. I don't. My poor wife. She's, you know, she works nights, and so when she does come home, I'm like, I got 1,000 things I want to say, and I'm always trying to jump down. And Beth's like, I gotta get some sleep. I go, I know, but look, check this out. Check this out. Look at this, and I've got all these things going on in my mind, and I guess. I was just talking to my friend Sean, my producer, and I said, you know, winning the belt was great, but this, and I love and appreciate each and every one of you when you say it's about time, and you know, it's a long time coming, and this and that. But the reality is, it's the perfect time. I started thinking about just the whole divine aspect, and it's like, you know, it is the perfect time. Right now is the perfect time, because I would have never said yes to that where are they now if I wasn't, like, again, 4 years ago, middle finger, nah man, I'm not where I want to be. But everything that's happened, everything I've done, I'm in a position where I'm happy with my children. I'm just happy with everything, and the regrets are gone, and the wishes and the wouldas and the shouldas and the couldas are all gone. And you know, and I wouldn't have appreciated it as much as I do right now, but it's so this time as I'm traveling through, it's funny, is I'm just kind of filling in all of these little voids and gaps of the person that was broken and pissed off and angry and what drove me through this. And I'm just happy. It's like the perfect time, and I just, yeah, man, it's pretty incredible, the whole thing.
And I know I shouldn't say this. I hear, you know, people telling me in my head, myself, don't say what I'm about to say. This is the perfect time. I have yet to go to a UFC Hall of Fame induction, and I'm telling you, I will be there for yours in July.
I appreciate you. That means a lot. Thank you. And I can't wait. Like I said, it was the best thing I did when I got to call James. And I should have told James a long time ago. But like I said, the thing about James Pryor, and I want this to be, I mean, I don't want, he was out there. He would show up to all my wrestling matches in high school, and he would film them. And I mean, I've known him since I was a toddler. I've known him since I was a kid from the racetrack and stuff. And he would show up and he would film. And when I would, and the reason why this was so important to me was when I would get home, I couldn't wait to watch the match. I couldn't wait to watch the tape. And it wasn't to watch me wrestle. It was to hear the conversation going on in the back, hearing people walk up to my mother and say congratulations, hearing my mother cheer, hearing my mother laugh, hearing James, like, he was literally taking the position of my father. He was a father figure. He had this father role, like that's that voice. That's my father, you know, and that's what a dad should be doing. And sitting there and having that kind of pride, hearing all the kids, my sister screaming, you know, Ashley and everybody from the other family, just coach screaming and cheering and everybody having fun. But me, if you know me, you know my story. I set out. That's when I realized this is what I got to do for the rest of my life. I want my mother to be happy. I want her to smile. I want her to be appreciative. I don't want her to be down and think, damn, I stayed with this man too long, that abusive POS, or I was a failure as a mom because I've got a son that's serving 55 years in prison. I didn't want her to think that. I wanted to know she was the best mother in the world, and that's why I set out to become this world champion, was because of those tapes. And I waited a long time to tell him, because when this whole, you know, getting maybe in the Hall of Fame and things like that, I was like, man, when that day comes, I'm going to call James and I'm going to tell him. And it was, we're talking 10, 11 years. I held on to this thing. If this day ever comes, you know, I'm going to call him. He's the first person I'm going to tell. And boy, I'll tell you what, it was halftime of the Super Bowl. And my friend David had it on speakerphone, and he's like, James, and he's there, he is. And I was like, man, this is for you. This is for you. You set me on this path a long, long time ago. Him and Rick Maxson, with the other dad, like I said, it was driving me to all my tournaments. That sat there, him and his wife, waiting for us to finish and supporting us, you know. And I was like, this is for you. You did this. You're the reason why I did this. You're the reason why I got on that train. And you're the reason why I took my family on a journey that I hope they enjoyed. And that's not me. This was the best stamp in the world, because it filled all those holes and those gaps. And I'm happy. Even with the losses, with everything, I'm happy. And it's just crazy how it worked. And so I can't wait to dedicate this to him. I can't wait to give him this. And, you know, it's funny, when I text him, I was like, man, I hope I can call you Pops, because you've been my dad for years. You just didn't realize it. But hearing that voice in that camera, you know, that's what a father's voice should sound like. So,
right. Definitely. Great stuff. Pretty Jens, wild, as huh? always, thank you for your time. I'm going to talk to you again, I'm sure, way before July. But I can't wait to see you out there in Vegas in July for International Fight Week.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. This is going to be a lot of fun. I hope everybody, yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be something. I'm already working on the speak, so, you know.
Well, you got a couple months to work on that. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Oh, I know,
Jens.
But I got 1,000 things I want to say, you know.
I'm sure.
I appreciate it. You guys have a great day. Thank you.
Congrats, champ.
You are a Hall of Famer. How cool is that? And you know, you guys, you may know a little bit of the story, Caleb. I don't know if you know much about his story, but not good, you know, where he came from. And he went to the right place at the right time. The Miletich fighting systems at that time, you know, was the dominant force. And it's crazy. Robbie Lawler, you know, in junior high.
Yeah,
at the time.
But we see that.
I was going to ask him if he had that tattoo in junior high. You know,
but you know, we see it in martial arts all the time. And if you're coming from a broken home and you're coming from a place of abuse,
a family,
a martial art can become a family. And as we see,
sports
can lead
in general,
to,
right.
Big part
football,
of a club.
Everything.
Sports in general, but it is different. You know, the mixed martial arts world, I mean, not that I'm an athlete or anything like that. You know, I've been in the locker rooms. I've been in the clubs. Those gym facilities, family kind of thing, it's, to me, it just seemed different. You know, I felt like when I used to work out at the gym, in the fight gym, the MMA gym in Tampa, I felt like I was part of that family and still do. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been to that facility in forever.
Yeah.
You know, so we got about 30 seconds. I know you had some things to talk about. Anything you can spit out quickly?
You can't really follow up with that. Nah. That story. It was an amazing show, you know, like moving stuff, you know, I'm happy for him. It's awesome.
I've been to the Pro Football Hall of Fame one time, and yeah. That's when Warren Sapp went in. I've already booked my hotel for Ronde.
Yeah.
I've never been to the UFC induction. I always find something else to do. I will go there for Jens Pulver and the whole Miletich team that will be there, and his family, and I know his family and wife and kids, and yeah, good stuff. It couldn't well have deserved. Happened to a nicer guy.
Yeah.
It sucks that it took as long as it did, but like you said, it was the perfect time, so it's the perfect time.
You change your stance on how long it takes to get into a Hall of Fame?
You know, I was waiting for you to say
yeah.
it. We'll bring it up next week, sure. Because I have a reason.
Okay.
And we'll talk about it next week. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. All 77 of our guests that came on, I want to thank them as well. Will you be here next week?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know what your schedule is yet. All right. Until next week, this is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8 Man Strong and Staff Sun.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Got bills? Looking for work, but nobody is hiring? Staff Zone is. As the leading provider of commercial construction, industrial, and special event staffing throughout the Southeast and Texas, Staff Zone has plenty of work to go around, and they need you now. Don't wait. Go now to www.thestaffzone.com and find a branch closest to you. Work today, get paid today. That's the Staff Zone way.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.